Hello, and welcome to the March 2022 IASB Update Podcast. My name is Neely Shaw, and I am the Executive Technical Director at the IASB. I am joined by Andres Barco, as everyone knows, the Chair of the IASB.
Hi, Neely. Great to be back.
Thanks, Andres. And we've had, Andres, a very productive set of IASB meetings this past week from the 22nd to the 24th of March, and we thought it'd be helpful to highlight some key takeaways from that meeting. Maybe you could start us off with some of the more cross-cutting projects. We had two in particular, and that is the IASB's third agenda consultation and its management commentary project.
Sure. I think that's a great place to start. And the reason for that is that given the cross-cutting nature of both of these projects, we had some of our colleagues from the ISSB at the table as observers for both of these sessions. So we're really adding connectivity considerations to our discussions. If I start with the first one, and you may then continue with the second. So on the third gender consultation, we continued developing our strategic plan by discussing possible projects we could start in the next 5 years. Our stakeholders recommended a wide range of potential projects in their feedback. And to just provide a bit of color, that's 70 plus different projects. And while we recognize the importance of all of these topics, we need to prioritize, and that is pretty evident. So in March, the IASB made decisions to narrow the list of potential projects for further consideration. Throughout our discussion, we also had possible connectivity considerations between the work of the IASB and the work of the ISSB on projects such as intangibles, climate-related risks, and pollutant pricing mechanisms.
You know, Andres, I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised, not only with the feedback that we received from our stakeholders, but also with the board discussions. I mean, you had mentioned we had some 70 plus recommendations from our stakeholders in the comment letters. But what became evident as the staff went through its technical analysis is that there were consistent themes bubbling up as the most likely candidates for further consideration. And those projects, you'd already named a few: intangibles, climate-related risks, and pollutant pricing mechanisms. But four other ones are cryptocurrencies, going concern disclosures, operating segments, and statement of cash flows. So I think even though it's really quite difficult to prioritize, because it does mean saying no to some stakeholders, it was reassuring to know that there really is a consensus coming around here. And as a next step, when the staff comes back to the board in April, we will be making a recommendation about what subset of those projects to actually add to the board's work plan for 2022 to 2026.
Absolutely. And then obviously the hard work will fall on our shoulders, because we need to shortlist a shortlist, right? But first things first. So if I then continue with the other project that you referenced as cross-cutting that we had in March, which is management commentary. This project seeks to update our guidance on management commentary to incorporate innovations and address gaps in reporting, such as around companies' long-term prospects, including information about intangible resources and relationships and sustainability matters. In March, the IASB started discussing feedback on its proposed draft. The key messages discussed from feedback were a very strong support for the project from many stakeholders, in particular from investors, and that obviously is reassuring. The need for connectivity with the work of the ISSB, there you go, and that we enable connectivity, or to enable connectivity, I should say, many stakeholders suggested that the project is paused while the ISSB developments are taking place. In April, the staff will present feedback on other aspects of the ISSB's proposal, and it then expects to ask the ISSB about a path forward on the project, considering the feedback and the work of the ISSB. That path forward still needs to be discussed, but we've said in other places, this project is a good candidate for a possible joint project between the two boards.
So a long road ahead of us still, but let's move on to everyone's favorite topic, or maybe I should say, Andreas, one of your favorite topics, financial instruments. In March, the ISSB discussed two specific FI projects. One is the post-implementation review on the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9, And the other is its project on financial instruments with characteristics of equity. Starting with the post-implementation review, or PIR for short, the IASB began discussing the feedback that it received on its request for information, whose comment period ended in January. And just as a reminder, many people are probably aware that when IFRS 9 was developed, it was developed in three phases, one being classification and measurement, the other being expected credit losses, and the third being hedge accounting requirements. So the PIR is following that path, and right now we're just focusing on classification and measurement requirements. And the overall message that was discussed at the board table and came through from the comment letters is that in general, classification and measurement requirements in the standard are working as intended. Having said that, though, there are some specific topics that the board will need to address in the coming months, including the assessment of contractual cash flows, including for financial assets with sustainability-linked features and contractually linked instruments, the business model assessment, equity instruments and other comprehensive income, modifications to contractual cash flows, and amortized cost and the effective interest method.
So certainly things that sound interesting. Probably I should not add the overall consideration in saying that the feedback was really that people seem to be happy with how the standard is working. And that's notwithstanding the subjects that you just mentioned that we certainly will be looking into. Shall I then take on to the other financial instruments project, which is financial instruments with characteristics of equity, or FICE? Our staff brought the project to the board, which aims to address a variety of practice issues with applying IAS 32, which is our presentation standard for financial instruments. This month, the IASB discussed the topic of reclassification of issued financial instruments. Questions have arisen on whether IAS 32 permits or requires reclassification after initial recognition, when the substance of the contractual terms changes without a modification to the contract. So nothing happens to the contract per se, there is no change in certain conditions, but something outside changes. For instance, when the company issues a derivative that is settled in its own equity instruments and the functional currency of the company changes, this affects whether the fixed for fixed condition in IAS 32 is met, even though the actual terms of the contract have not been modified. IAS 32 does not have general requirements for reclassifying financial liabilities and equity instruments. The board did not make any decisions this month, but the discussion suggested that several board members were leaning towards an approach that would require reclassification in some cases. Staff will provide further analysis to enable a future board decision. So stay tuned.
Thanks, Andreas. So why don't we move on to some of our other technical projects? Let's start with primary financial statements. I think many of our listeners will remember that in the past, we've talked about how there are three key aspects to primary financial statements. And in the March meeting, the board progressed on two of those key aspects. The first relates to the aspects of the project to improve the structure and comparability of the statement of profit or loss through requirements for subtotals. Now, you might recall that the exposure draft for the primary financial statements project proposed a general model for subtotals, as well as separate proposals for some companies, such as banks. And under these separate proposals, some income and expenses that would be classified in the investing or financing categories under the general model would instead be classified in the operating section of the statement of profit or loss. In March, the IASB discussed the structure of the statement of profit or loss for these types of companies, so banks and investing companies. And in response to feedback, the IASB decided to provide clarification to help companies assess if their main business activities are investing or providing financing to customers, and to clarify that when there has been a change to this assessment, the change is applied prospectively and disclosed in the notes to the financial statements. So that is, as I said, one aspect of this PFS project on subtotals. The other key aspect that was advanced in the March meetings relates to the portions of the PFS project on management performance measures, or measure that are sort of akin to non-GAAP measures. And in March, the IASB confirmed that management performance measures will be disclosed in a single note to the financial statements. The IASB also talked about cross-referencing to disclosures in other documents and noted that this could undermine this concept of having disclosures in a single note. And the benefit of that is that it makes it easy for investors to be able to find the disclosures and understand how all of those disclosures fit together. So the IASB had talked about whether there was a need to prohibit cross-referencing, but it decided that this was not necessary because general practice is to cross-reference only when it is specifically permitted by an IFRS accounting standard.
That was an interesting discussion, and I could only encourage our listeners, if they do have an interest in the project, go back and listen to the discussion. I think it was really informative. Shall I update our listeners on business combinations under common control? Mm-hmm. This month, we had basically one question that was devoted to the objective and the scope of the business combinations under common control project. And whilst we tentatively decided to update the project's objective to reflect the stage of the project and to emphasize that in developing reporting requirements, the IASB is considering the needs of users of the receiving entity's financial statements, we also decided that we will not enlarge the scope of the project. So let me give you an example. Let's assume subsidiary A and B are both under common control of the parent company. This project will look at the accounting of subsidiary A's financial statements of the transfer of a business from subsidiary B to its sister subsidiary A. And that means that this project will not cover topics such as the reporting of the disposal in subsidiary B's financial statements or common control transactions other than business combinations under common control. I think that's really to stay focused and to really put the emphasis where there is a perceived gap in the literature.
Absolutely. Moving on to our extractive activities project, some of you might remember this is a research project, so it's still in the early stages. We haven't had any consultation documents on this project in recent years. But at this meeting, the IASB agreed on a project plan for the extractives project, which is looking at whether to develop requirements or guidance to improve disclosure for a company's exploration and evaluation expenditures and activities. In addition to exploring whether to remove the temporary status of IFRS 6, which is the IASB's accounting standard on exploration for and evaluation of mineral resources. Consistent with the project plan, the next step is for the staff to engage in further research and outreach and return to the IASB with more discussion in coming months. So stay tuned.
Excellent. So if we then move from our standard setting work more into the camp of maintenance and consistent application, let me update you on a point that reached the board, which is to consider the Interpretations Committee agenda decision for so-called TILTRO 3 transactions, which are liquidity lines that are being advanced by the European Central Bank. The board discussed the committee's agenda decision and did not object to its finalization. The question broadly involved whether the interest rate on TILTRO 3 loans represents a below market rate and whether the transaction contains a government grant in the scope of IAS 20. And how conditionality related to the contractual interest rate is reflected in the calculation of the effective interest rate or in the revisions of estimated future cash flows. And I said the board didn't object to the finalization.
And then moving on, last but not least, we can chat about our IFRS for SMEs project. As part of our second comprehensive review of this standard, the IASB is drawing to an end its discussions of the proposals that will go into the exposure draft that we aim to publish in half to 2022. So just as a little bit of background, every few years, the IASB considers whether to holistically update the IFRS for SMEs standard to align with the changes that have been made to full IFRS standards. And this month, the IASB discussed two areas. The first relates to disclosure requirements in the IFRS for SME standard. And the board agreed to a decision framework for its proposals to update the disclosure requirements based on the underlying recognition and measurement requirements in the IFRS for SME standard. So what that means is, if the IASB has decided not to propose changes to recognition and measurement requirements in the IFRS for SME standard from what it currently has, then it would propose not to make any disclosure changes. So in other words, old recognition and measurement requirements continue, therefore old disclosure requirements in the IFRS for SME standard would continue. Secondly, however, where the IASB is proposing to align recognition and measurement with the IFRS accounting standards, then it would leverage the disclosure simplifications that the IASB is proposing in another project on subsidiaries of listed companies that are SMEs. So what this means is that in a separate project, the IASB is exploring opportunities for disclosure simplifications for subsidiaries of listed companies that have to report in a consolidated set of financial statements and would continue the recognition and measurement of full IFRS, but may benefit from some disclosure simplifications because these subsidiaries are still SMEs and may not need to have the full disclosures of full IFRS. So in that situation, the disclosure framework that the board agreed to is that the IASB would propose disclosure simplifications consistent with this other project on subsidiaries that are SMEs. And then finally, in situations where the IASB is proposing different recognition and measurement requirements from IFRS accounting standards and different from what's already in existing IFRS for SME standard, in those situations, it would seek to simplify the disclosure requirements as well. So a little confusing, but there's a logic to it in that the disclosures would naturally follow what the IASB is doing in terms of recognition and measurement for each of the IFRS for SMEs sections. And then the second topic that the IASB discussed was the measurement of financial guarantee contracts, for which there currently is no specific requirements in the standard. And in March, the IASB decided to propose that such contracts should be initially measured at the premium received, and then subsequently measured at the higher of either the initial amount recognized less amortization over the life of the guarantee, or the amount of the expected credit losses determined using a simplified model.
Excellent. Thank you, Neely. That concludes our technical discussions. There's one thing that I should mention, which is that we bid farewell to Tom Scott, our board member from Canada. He completes his term at the end of March. We wish him and his wife all the best. Looking to the future, we wanted to inform you that the IFRS Foundation Conference will be held on the 23rd and 24th of June here in London. And the conference will be in a hybrid meeting format, so you can register now, and hopefully we see you either in person or remotely. You can also catch up on previous episodes of this and the IFRS Interpretations Committee on our website, as well as our YouTube channel and Spotify. If you like this podcast, please do take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. And remember to tune in next month. Thanks, Nellie.